we're starting on time. Okay, so we this week only two questions instead of three. You'll tell me which one you want to talk about. Full disclosure, I don't know the answer to one of them, but at least we could talk about it. I'm not going to tell you which one I don't know the answer to in advance. One Shaila was as follows: a doctor, an old Talmud of mine, Talmud Chaver, I guess I would say, who is now doing his fellowship in fertility medicine, is working in a hospital. He worked it out. He's off on Shabbos. He doesn't have to work on Shabbos. But in exchange for that, he works every Sunday. Apparently, fellows in a hospital do not yet make the money that they will one day make. And that's understood in the hospital that they could use an extra couple of bucks. So one of the things that people offered him, the hospital offered him, they told him the person that normally does the circumcisions in the hospital doesn't work on Sundays. So since he's around Sunday anyway, he could do all of the circumcisions that come up in the hospital on Sunday, and it'll make a few extra dollars because he can get paid for doing the procedure on a Sunday. Now, he works in the New York area hospital. A certain percentage, I don't know exactly what percentage, a certain percentage of the babies that he's going to be doing circumcision on if he were to take this job are going to be Jewish. Obviously, a certain percentage will not be Jewish. And he wants to know, should he dafka take the job and do the circumcisions? Should he dafka not do the circumcisions? Or does halacha not have anything, you know, is it no halacha preference one way or the other? Good? Question one? Yeah? Okay. Question two. A guy was sitting somewhere, and an obviously religious-looking woman passes by, walks by, and she's reaching for something in her pocketbook, and she pulls out her car keys, but not realizing as she's rushing somewhere, something else falls out of her pocketbook. So he rushes to do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, right? He runs to go pick it up, and as he's about to pick it up, he sees that what had fallen out of her pocketbook was a pack of bedika cloths. Bedika cloths, without getting into details of what it is, it might be embarrassing for a young man to go and return this to this kind of item to a woman. It might be embarrassing for her to have him do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. There's no one else around. There's no other way that it's going to get returned to her. He wants to know, is it appropriate in that situation to do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, or is it not appropriate in that situation? So those are the two shaylos for this week. Any preference?
Second.
All those who prefer number the first shayla, the doctor shayla. Yeah, all those for the second one? It's kind of even. All right. We'll try to do them both. So I guess we'll start with the first one. We'll start with the first one because the first one is the first one. So what's the issue over here in doing these milas? How many issues are there? I mean, that's always the first point of answering shaylas is figuring out what the issues are, right? So how many issues are there over here? Let's what are they? Yeah.
It wouldn't always be on the eighth day.
Not only would it not always be on the eighth day, it would always not be on the eighth day, pretty much. Meaning in the hospitals, they do circumcisions on day one, pretty much, because that's the only day the baby's in the hospital. They usually do not bring the baby back to the hospital. Once the baby's there, they do the circumcision, and then they send the baby home, when they normally would. So it used to be, if you read like old tshuvas about hospital circumcisions from like the 1940s and 50s, it's an entirely different metzias. Women used to stay in the hospital for a week and a half with the baby, and then, you know, even in the last 20 years, it's gone from being a standard 2 or 3 days at least to you know, unless it's a C-section, to one day and you're out. You know, it's at least in America. In Israel, they have like a whole system where you go to some other women after having a baby get to go recuperate often for a few extra dollars and go to some other place to recuperate. But the time in the hospital is very short, and the bris is going to be done on day one. So that's issue number one. Is there any value to a mila, positive value or negative value, to a mila done on day one? What else? What other issues we have? Just one issue? Okay, so father's mitzvah, maybe, does this count as him appointing as a shliach, right? He's asking, they don't do circumcisions on babies unless the parents ask for it, right? Unless the parents want it. So, but he's not actually doing the minoy shlichus. This is a big machlokes aposkim whether you should do minoy shlichus for bris milah. But in this case, the father's not going to have a regular. He's not going to have a moel. You know, so when the father doesn't do a milah, so then the mitzvah does go to other Jews to try to fill in and get the mitzvah done, rather than to wait till the boy becomes bar mitzvah and it becomes his mitzvah.
Is it even kosher?
In what sense?
It depends, how they do it in the hospital.
Ah, maybe the way they do it in a hospital is not a kosher milah. The way they do it in a hospital is very different than the way we would do a bris milah. So these are the issues. So first of all, first issue is milah before 8 days. What's the value? What's the risk? Second of all, the issues with hospital milas and in what way they're different, and then maybe and then at the end, Rav Shem will get to what various poskim. Oh, also third issue I should have mentioned: bris for a non-Jew. Is there anything wrong? Because most of the time he's going to be doing a circumcision on non-Jewish babies, right? So shouldn't call it a bris, I guess a mila on a non-Jew. I know a moel who, when he, I know a few moelim who, when they were learning mila, the way they would do it is in Israel, they would the Israeli moelim would help them train by going to Shari Tzedek, and whatever Arab babies were there, they would have the trainees do the practice on the Arab babies. So that's. So I once asked a guy who's in training. I said, "Oh, you're doing bris milah?" He said, "No bris yet, just milah. You know, not yet." So what was I saying? Yeah, is there anything wrong with doing it on a non-Jewish baby? Okay, so let's take issue by issue. First of all, is there any positive value in doing a milah before 8 days? So the Rama writes, black on white in Shulchan Aruch, Simreish Samachbeis in Yaradeya. Avar umal delayla. If a person does a mila at night, tzarech lachzor lahatif menon dam bris. You got to repeat. You got to do atavas dam bris. No good. Then the Rama says malu toches ubayom yatsa. But if you do a bris mila during the daytime, when it's less than 8 days, you're yotze. You're yotze. What does yotze mean? You're not going to have to do atavas dam bris later on. Apparently, there is some positive value in doing a mila before 8 days. Who argues on the Rama besides for all the Nosei Kalim? You know who else argues on the Rama? The Rama. The Rama argues on the Rama. Two simanim later, the Rama writes in Simin Reish Samach Dalit, Tinok Shehutzchu Lemolo Toches Mipnei Asakana Ein Chilik Bein Yisrael La'akum Dekol Toches Lo Mikri Mila. Anything within 8 days is simply not called a Mila. So we have a stir in the Rama. Is there any value in doing a milah within 8 days? But it does seem that we paskin like that first Rama, that at least you don't need to do a tafas dam bris. Meaning, normally, if let's say you have a baby that's nolad mahul, this happens every once in a while, the baby is born without a foreskin. I was once, when I was first started teaching, I was at a parent-teacher conferences, and the father came in, and he sat down, and I remember who it was, actually. He sat down, and he said, Rabbi, before you say anything else, I need to tell you. My son was born with a mila. Said he's still failing Gemara, not helping. But if a baby's born with a mila, so you would do atavas dam bris, but over here, having done the mila within 8 days, there's not even a requirement of atavas dam bris. So on the one hand, from that Rama, it seems that there is value to this. Now, in addition to that, you're also, what's going to be the other option? If this guy doesn't do the bris, then what's going to happen? Some other doctor will do the bris. Very likely a non-Jewish doctor will do the bris. And what happens if a non-Jew, is there any value in a non-Jew doing a bris on a Jewish baby? Says the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeus and Reish Samach Dalet, Hakol Ksherim Lamal Afilu Eved Isha V'Katan. Anyone could do a bris milah, even an eved, even a woman, even a katan. I wouldn't recommend hiring a arel Yisrael shemesu achum machmas milah. If you have a Jewish arel and he's an arel because his brothers died from milah, what's it called? Hemophiliac, right? Was that with the bleeding disease, right? So he can't get a bris milah. V'im yesh Yisrael gadol shiodei alamul hareu kodem lekulam. But if you have an adult over, meaning a male over bar mitzvah that knows how to do mila, that's the best. Aval, akum afilu humahu lo yimol klal. a guy cannot do mila even if he's circumcised. Meaning, what the Shulchan Aruch, the reason the Shulchan Aruch keeps talking about whether he is or isn't circumcised is because of the Gemara Darshan. So the pasuk himol yimol, that someone hamol, that someone who's gemalt should do mila. Someone who's not gemalt should not do mila. And the Gemara of Avodah Zarah says gemalt doesn't mean physically has a mila. It means when we say gemalt, it means someone who is not an aral. An aral is a way of referring to a non-Jew. Non-Jew is assumed stam to be halachically an aral, whether he's physically an aral or not. So that's just the point that the Shulchan Aruch is highlighting by saying that a non-Jew shouldn't do it, even if he happens to be circumcised, because a non-Jew, by definition, is an aral. Rabbi Yoel Schoenfeld said that when he used to sell chametz before Pesach to a non-Jew, to one of the local non-Jews, he went with like a much older, I think maybe a Hasidish rabbi, who ran the Mechira and only spoke Yiddish. And Rabbi Schoenfeld said that he was the translator between the non-Jew and this elderly Hasidish rabbi. And the rabbi would say things like, Zug der Orel, you know, go tell the Orel that. So he would say, he said I should tell the kind gentleman. So that's not exactly the translation, but you know, for Shalom, that was how he translated. So in that sense, the Arel that the Shulchan Aruch is talking about, that the Gemara is talking about, means a non-Jew. Even if he's Malul, Shinatu Milav, he's Malul in Sarach Lachsav Lomul Pam Shenis. But, says the Shulchan Aruch, if a non-Jew does the Milav, you don't have to redo it. Ooh, so it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch, if a non-Jew does it, it's same as a Jew doing it within 8 days. That it's good enough that you don't have to redo it. Now, it comes along the Ramah, that you do have to be Matav Dam Bris if a non-Jew does it. So even if a non-Jew does it after 8 days, you'd have to do Matav Dam Bris. Meaning, there's no value in a non-Jew doing it, there's negative value in a non-Jew doing it. In fact, the Shach over there in Sifkan Gimel writes that when the Ramah says V'yesh Omrim, it's not really arguing on the Mechaber. The Mechaber just says you have to do another Mila. But at Tavis Dan Bris, even the Mechaber would agree that you have to do. That's not agreed upon by everybody. That reading of the Ramah, the Shagas Aryeh in the Tshuva, disagrees with that and thinks that that it is a Machlokes between the Mechaber and the Ramah. But be that as it may, it seems certainly that it's better to have a Jew do the Mila than a non-Jew do the Mila. And in fact, especially this doctor is Yirei Shemayim, he's a Talmud Chacham, and the Ramah writes, Yesh l'adam lachzor l'hader achar mo'el u'bal bris ha'yoseh tov v'tzadik, that you should always try to get the biggest tzadik as a mo'el and a bal bris. Who else is a bal bris besides a mo'el? The father and the Sandik, right? Those are the Bali Bris. Those are the people you skip talking for, right? That's when they're in the minyan. So what's the downside, right? So it seems obvious that you should do it. So the downside is that it could be a problem of lifnei iver, l'chora, meaning you're taking away the possibility of this child ever getting a proper bris, because at most he's ever going to have a tavas dam bris, meaning the orla is not growing back, right? So he's not going to ever be able to have a proper bris after this. My brother, who is a Moel and a Talmud Chacham, my brother wrote to me that, you know, if you assume like the Ramah, it seems like a no-brainer, you should get it done. But the Shach, the Tal, the Shach Gesari all disagree with the Ramah and hold that it's absolutely possible to do it B'toch Shemona, to do it within 8 days. And therefore, it would seem to be a problem of Lifnei Iver. And you would normal conventional rules of Lifnei Iver are such that, what are the rules normally? Basic rule of Lifnei Iver, the most important distinction in Lifnei Iver. No? What's the most important distinction? Come on. Could he do it without your help, or could he not do it without your help? If he could do it without your help, then it's not Lifnei Iver Daraisa, it's only Nisayei Midrabana. If he can't do it without your help, he's only able to do it because you're there. That's Lifnei Iver Daraisa. Ooh. Would this happen without you? Yeah, they'll find someone else to do it. It's not like the hospital is going to shut down the circumcision department. Right? They'll find someone else to do it without you. So they that would knock it down to Lifnei Iver Midrabana. But we like to listen to rabbis also. Right? So why does it help to knock it down to Lifnei Iver Midrabana? So it's a famous chiddush of the Shach and the Dagon Ravavan explaining the Shach, writes that whenever you're dealing with Lifnever Midrabanan, and the person who you're being machshir is someone who's not observant anyway, who doesn't care about Torah mitzvot, and not interested in Torah mitzvot, you don't have the concern of Mesayeya Midrabanan, of Lifnever Midrabanan. Only Lifnever Midaraisa would apply to someone who's not observant. Not all Achronim agree with that, but Rav Moshe assumes that way lahalacha. Rav Moshe Feinstein assumes that way lahalacha. And I think most poskim typically will use that Dagum Ravava. So over here, Lechor, it's a Lifnever Midrabanan, right? Because they could do it without you. And it's obviously people who are not observant that are doing this. So maybe it would not be a problem with Lifnever. But on the other hand, it's more than Lifnever. You know, what's Lifnever? What's the Gemara's example of Lifnever? Classic case. Give me a classic case of Lifnever. What? Say again? That's actually a Shaila Nachronim. That's what the words mean. That's a Shaila Nachronim, whether that actually is Lifnever. If you literally put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. I once accidentally did that. It was an accident. I was schlepping groceries up to my aunt and uncle's apartment. I dropped one bag in front of the neighbor's apartment downstairs. And I left it there, thinking I would come back for it. And my aunt was looking for stuff. She's like, what happened? You know, where's... I'm like, oh gosh, I dropped a bag down in front of the neighbor's apartment. The neighbor's blind downstairs. So I was actually, but that's a Shiloh postum, whether it should be understood literally, but what's a classic example?
Two sides of the river.
Two sides of the river, right? The Gemara says, if a Nazir says, can I have some wine, and you have access to the wine, and he does not, so to hand him the wine is a violation of Lifnever Midaraisa. Now, when you're handing him the wine, you are not opening his mouth and pouring it down his throat. You're handing him the wine, then he is doing the Avera. You're enabling him to do the Avera, but he's doing the Avera. This is worse, right? This is not Lifnever. This is more than Lifnever. You're actually taking away the possibility of a mitzvah. You know, this would be more similar to taking a dead body and touching a kohen with it. Meaning not inviting a kohen, look, there's a dead body here, come to the bodies exhibit with me or something, and let's look at the dead bodies. No, that's not what you do. You're taking an actual mace and touching it to a kohen. That would be, that lechora would be aser. In fact, the Rambam Paskins in the third parak of Hilchos Avil, my brother pointed out, that if a person is metame a kohen, and the kohen is shogeg, the guy who's metame the kohen gets malchus for the lav of tuma. Meaning, doing it to him is as bad as doing the isser itself, making him do the isser. Hilchos Chinuch questions that, but ultimately brings raya for the Rambam. However, that's probably a more limited case. To Tumas Kohanim, that's probably a separate limud and a separate reason for that. Now, furthermore, another point to consider over here: Minchas Chinuch Mitzvah Beis and the Mitzvah of Mila argues that the Mechayev of Mila is the presence of an Arla. Absent an Arla, a foreskin. Arla means, of course, two things in the Torah, right? It means a foreskin and also means. What else does it mean? The fruit from the first 3 years after the tree is planted. That was the funny picture that was going around. I got an email once. Someone showed me a picture of a wine bottle, of a wine produced in Israel, where they were lazy on the translation. I guess they used Google Translate. And it said on one side, Luloch, Shash, Arla, Vetevel, or whatever, and or Shvias. And the other side it said, without concern for foreskins, which is true, but also, right, hopefully it's true, but also there's no concern for it. So Minchas Chinuch, Mitzvah Beis, is Mechadesh, that the Mechayev of Mila is an Orla. If there's no Orla, there's no Chiv Mila. And he said, what about the fact that you have to do Atavas Dam Bris? He said, that's Drabana. Anytime you do Atavas Dam Bris, it's only Drabana. But on a Doraisa level, if there's no Arla, there's no Chiv of Mila. Ooh, so you might be doing a huge favor for this child. Why, what are you doing? If the child were to be left without a Mila, right, with an Arla, so he'd be an Arel his whole life, and he'd have a mitzvah of Mila that he's being Mevatel. His parents, his father would be Mevatel mitzvah until his bar mitzvah, and then he'd be Mevatel it afterwards. By removing the Arla, you're taking away the Chiv. You're making it that he's no longer going to be chayv in this mitzvah. Minchas Chinuch says, "Mashal ma'adavar doma," like you round off a corner of a beggar of dalat kanfos. So it's not chayv in tzitzis. You're not being mevatel any mitzvah. Mashal ma'adover doma, it says minchas chinuch, even though this is not minchas chinuch l'shitaso and how he understands the mitzvah of teshbisu elsewhere, but minchas chinuch writes that if a person eats up all of his chametz a week before Pesach, so now he's just not chayiv in teshbisu. There's nothing to destroy. He ate it all beforehand. So that's what minchas chinuch understands, which is interesting, although it's not so applicable to this case, because in this case, the kid's going to have the arla removed one way or the other anyway. So it could be you're doing nothing positive, nothing negative. He's going to have the arla removed anyway. So again, according to the Ramah, you're providing great value because you're taking away the need for atavas dam bris. You're doing something positive. According to other achronim, the other nosikel in the shulchan, probably not doing anything of great value, but probably not hurting him that much either because it was going to happen anyway. What about the different ways that the bris is done? So I asked the doctor, I said, how do they do it differently? He says, we definitely do it differently in hospital protocol than a moel does. He says, we cut less in the hospital. He says, I have watched closely what moelim do and what we do in the hospital. Much less is cut. We use a clamp in the hospital, whereas a moel only uses a shield. You've seen that metal thing that the moel puts over. But in the hospital, they use this clamp, meaning in a hospital, what they try to make it is, in general, in the hospital, they try to make it that you can't fail because they're so worried about lawsuits about everything. So they make, and not just lawsuits, let's be down the cops close, they don't want to hurt people. So they try to make it that everything is idiot-proof. That you could be the stupidest doctor in the whole world and you're not going to mess up the mila, right? So they have a clamp where it only reveals X amount of skin, where that's all that's accessible to you to cut once the clamp is on. So they use a clamp in the hospital. They use anesthesia in the hospital. So do any of these things, obviously they don't do a priya, they do one cut. They don't do metzitza, not metzitza bepeh. they're not doing that in the hospital. In Shari Tzedek, they're doing that, meaning the Shari Tzedek, person that are done maishala, who's the big mile in Eretz Yisrael, will go to Shari Tzedek and he'll do all the, he'll bring whoever he's teaching at that time, and they'll, and if Maishala is doing, even on Arab babies, my brother told me he saw Maishala do Matzitza, which is crazy. It doesn't even make any sense. Like, why would he? But I have a Talmud who just had a baby recently, and he was making a bris at the Young Israel Woodmere, and he said that they told him that you're not allowed to do Matzitza Bepeh in the Young Israel Woodmere, that it's a rule. So he's from Eretz Yisrael. He was just here. His wife was here, and he was here with his wife having the baby. But they live in Eretz Yisrael, and he's not used to this. So he said, "Is that okay? Are we allowed to do this without metzitza bepeh? Is this going to be a problem? Is this because in Eretz Yisrael that's the culture that it's always done metzitza bepeh?" So I told him that Rav Shechter does not want us doing metzitza bepeh. He thinks that that's a very bad idea to do metzitza bepeh. And it's perfectly, and even like Rav David Cohen paskins to use it too, but a lot of the major posts, the Hasidic poskim say otherwise. The Hasidic Maalim are very makbir in doing tzitzit of the pen. But anyway, so going to the hospital milas. So is anesthesia a problem? The fact that they use anesthesia, so that's an interesting issue. Anesthesia, if you look into the topic of using an anesthetic to do a bris milah, so the real discussion is when it comes to adult milas. People coming from Russia in the late 1980s, early 1990s, and a lot of Jews wanted a milah. They didn't have a milah before, so they were putting them under general anesthesia. Well, general anesthesia is already an issue. That's a fantastic discussion in the poskim about general anesthesia, because mitzvah shrichas kavana, can you really have kavana at the shas? At the time of the actual mitzvah, you're out cold and you're not conscious of it. But before you told them to put you out cold and to do the mitzvah. So that's an interesting discussion. But to put a topical anesthetic on a baby like they do, and they would never risk general anesthesia on a baby. It's not worth it. The procedure is very, the risk of the anesthesia is much greater than the risk of the procedure. So they would never do that. But they do a topical anesthesia. It used to be somewhat controversial just because it's about changing anything in the way you do mila is always going to cause some controversy. I remember when my oldest nephew was born. My brother was at the time learning in the Kollel in Ner Yisrael, and the bris was in Ner Yisrael. It was a fleishig bris. That's the way they do it in the yeshiva, cold cuts or whatever. So the bris was in Ner Yisrael, and my brother is married to Rabbi. My sister-in-law is Rabbi Tendler's granddaughter. So Rabbi Tendler was at the bris, and after the Moel checked the baby, Rabbi Tendler went over to my sister-in-law and gave her some anesthesia and said, "Quick, put it on before the Moel sees." So okay, I think it's become more pretty much. I didn't ask my brother about this, but I think it's become pretty standard that they put something on, because they used to say. I remember I asked Rav Schechter about this at the time because I thought that was an interesting move by Rabbi Tendler, and Rav Schechter said that the doctors at the time told him that the baby doesn't really feel any pain. And there were studies back and forth for a while, but I think they've come to the conclusion that the baby does feel some pain. The kasha is, if the baby doesn't feel any pain, what's he screaming about? So the understanding was that he's screaming because it's uncomfortable, that they're holding his legs down and they're opening up his diaper and it's cold. But as it turns out, based on measuring his heart rate and based on measuring how long the babies scream, it seems that the babies do feel some pain. It doesn't seem that there's any real halachic issue with anesthesia. The taina was that the Gemara Maseches Ksuvos says that we don't say shasimcha b'mono at a bris because of tsar liyanuka, because the baby is in tsar. So you see, the Gemara is assuming that there's tsar liyanuka. So that, Rav Schechter said, that could just as easily mean that it's, the baby's not voting to do this at this point, to be held down and to have the diaper open and to have, that could be. What about the clamp? So most of the people I spoke to said that they believe the clamp that's used in the hospital will not passel a mila. Now, we don't use a clamp because the risk of using a clamp is if you leave it on for long enough and then you cut, there won't be any blood. And that's a problem. But typically, if you put it on and then just immediately do the mila, there will be some bleeding anyway. There are the plain shield that we use, that everyone says is fine, and almost every mohel uses one. The old style clamp that they used, which was very controversial and became standard in all the hospitals, is called the Gamko clamp. And the Rav and Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank all thought that you should not use it, and Orthodox Moelim don't use it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to passel the Mila. So given all of that, then there was like this third type of clamp, but we're not going to get into all the details of clamps since we only have 3 minutes left. So given all of that, it would seem that the Mila can be done in a somewhat kosher way. Separating the mila from the priya, the two parts of the mila, is something that a lot of Moelim don't do anyway. They do with one slice anyway, even though the priya is supposed to be b'tziporen. That's a whole discussion whether a Moel should wear gloves, because it's more difficult to do a priya b'tziporen. It's part of the discussion, at least, if a Moel is wearing gloves. But a lot of Moelim will just do it in one slice anyway. So it doesn't seem that would passel. What about the fact that it's a bris for a non-Jew? So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Chavav talks about doing a bris for a non-Jew, and the Gemara says if it's for the sake of Geirus, a Jew is allowed to do a bris on a non-Jewish baby, but if it's just for health reasons, then you're not allowed to do it on a non-Jewish baby. There is discussion with some of the Achronim if it's a violation, what the problem is doing on a non-Jewish baby, whether it's just like a Lo Sichanim kind of thing, or it's that people might confuse him for a Jew. That if he has a physical marker of a Jew, then people might confuse him for a Jew, and you don't want to create that confusion between who is and isn't a Jew. One of the more controversial areas in the world of Mila happens very often. You'll have a Jewish father, non-Jewish mother, they have a baby, and they're raising him biculturally or whatever, and they want to get him a bris mila. My brother lives in Northern California, gets these kinds of phone calls all the time. Usually an Israeli fellow who they say the Sivan Rechav Meir was saying that these studies show that Israelis who move to America assimilate much, much faster than American Jews, and much, much faster, obviously, than Israelis who stay in Israel, right? But because they're usually running away. So there's a whole, it's very likely they'll marry a non-Jew. So my brother gets these calls all the time to do a mila. My brother will say, there will not be a bracha on your mila. There's no, so there's a question, should Moelim do it as a mila l'shem gerus, just in case, because you know, very often when you do geus, you find that there's a lot that people have some reason, some connection to the Jewish people already, some genetic connection, you know, that their father is Jewish or whatever. So is it worthwhile to do a Mil Lashem geus? That's an interesting discussion in Poskim, not for now. So I asked our two great Poskim, two of the great Poskim here in Yeshiva, what they thought about this issue, whether the guy should take the job. Rav Willig thought without a doubt he should take the job. Otherwise a non-Jew will do it, and you have the Ramah. It's definitely going to be a benefit. It will be a Hatzalah Porta. And he said, don't worry that there will be non-Jews too, because nowadays the majority of non-Jews get circumcised. So it's not going to be like you're the one that's making a mark that's going to make it look like a Jew. Most non-Jews are circumcised also, and therefore it's not something that people would judge someone's Jewishness by looking at something like that. I asked Moreno Rav Schechter, and he thought, well, he said it's an interesting shaila. He said obviously you wouldn't say a bracha. I think he was more to think that the guy should do it for the same reason, because you have that Ramah, but he didn't commit. He gave me homework to do, which I did not do. He said, you have to look in Avodas Avodah. Shlomo Kluger has a long essay on this in Avodas Avodah about Moshe Rabbeinu doing a meal. That was what was going on with Moshe and Tzipora, and it's all Iska Halton with the Yaradeya. I did not have a chance to look at the Avodas Avodah. I was with Rav Ezra Schwartz, and Rav Ezra said, Rebbe, those are long pieces. He says, yeah, they're so beautiful. You know, they didn't deter him. You know, Rav Shulman happened to have been there, and Rav Shulman said that based on the Mishnah, it seems that it's not a mitzvah at all. It's just that you're taking away the shame arel, meaning because the Mishnah talks about if you confuse the babies, you're tabid var mitzvah, and the Mishnah calls if you mal a baby whose bris is supposed to be on Sunday on Shabbos, because you confused him with a baby whose bris is supposed to actually be on Shabbos. So the Gemara calls it, the Mishnah calls it tabid var mitzvah below asa mitzvah. So it doesn't even count as having done the mitzvah. But at least you took away the shame arel. So it would seem that the simple approach would be that the guy should do it, obviously not say a bracha, but do it in a way that will draw blood and probably have kavana for the mitzvah of Mila. And in that way, it will be at least a Hatzalah Porta. Okay, have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody.